You're listening to Let's Talk TriDelta, a podcast brought to you by TriDelta. In this podcast, we can dive deeper into some of the most powerful stories from our award-winning magazine, The Trident. And we can get up close and personal with some of our brave, bold, and kind members. Thank you for joining us. Now, let's talk TriDelta.
I'm Mindy Tucker, TriDelta's VP of Marketing and Communications and the managing editor of the award-winning Trident magazine. Thanks for tuning in. I am so excited about our guest today, our TriDelta sister, Jenny Mars. She is an alumna of the Beta Lambda chapter at the University of Central Florida. She is a wife and a mother of five kids who loves all things creative. She's a designer. She has blogs. She's got so many passions I can't wait to talk about today. Jenny and her husband, Dave. I keep wanting to call you Jenny Mars and Dave Mars.
Yeah. Like,
because that's what you do on the show. But yes. If I use her last name, that's why it's okay they do it. They live in a restored farmhouse in northwestern Arkansas and have a life filled with animals and children. And we're going to get into all that. Dave is a builder. You do the design aspect. And most recently, they have had the chance to launch a new show on HGTV. And it's called Fixer to Fabulous. And they fix up and restore historic homes in their community in northwest Arkansas. So, Jenny, welcome to Let's Talk TriDelta.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
This is fun.
We have her in studio today here.
Yes.
At TriDelta's executive office. So why don't you tell us why you're in town and why you happen to make a trip to executive office?
Yes, I actually am here because I was a field consultant, which they're not called field consultants
anymore. No, they're called chapter development consultants.
Okay, yes, that sounds very fancy. That's much more fancy. Yes, we'll say that. The year after I graduated. And so that was a long time ago. We won't say how long. But every year since, the girls that I traveled with, we get together every year. We have a little reunion trip. So we are here this year for our reunion trip.
I love it.
Yeah, for the weekend. It.
So they are here supporting you from outside the office here.
Yes.
And it's fun to get together with sisters and sort of, I think we talk about lifetime membership in TriDelta. Mm-hmm. And this is just another great example of how these friends sort of come with you.
They do. Oh my goodness. We met right out of, college that first summer when we started, and then we traveled that year together. And so I just think of the things that we've been through together. We've been through so many amazing celebrations and joyful occasions. We've been at all of each other's weddings, and then we've also been through really hard things together and walked through those together, and it makes me emotional to think about. But absolutely my dearest people, so it's good. Yeah.
Well, good. We're glad to have you guys here.
Thank you.
So let's talk about the show.
Okay.
How did Fixer to Fabulous come about?
Okay. So it is, my husband, Dave is a builder and I help in the design side. So we work together in Arkansas. And from what we understand, our network executive's name is Carrie. So she has a friend who lives in our town. So she knew about our town and knew that it's a really unique place. It's small, but it doesn't feel, it does feel small. I shouldn't say it doesn't feel small. It is just like this really vibrant small town, I suppose you could say. And so she knew about the town and she knew that it would make a great setting for a show. And so she kind of put feelers out and asked around about husband and wife teams is what they were looking for.
Yeah.
And so our names got thrown in the hat and they contacted us, and I always tell the story, but she emailed us. I got an email. We were actually on an airplane about to take off for our anniversary trip to Italy. And I was just checking my email and I had an email from Carrie from the network in my personal Yahoo, like old Yahoo account. So I thought it was spam, deleted it, didn't think anything of it. And then I found out from the friend who had given her our name. She's like, oh, I meant to tell you. I forgot to tell you. I'm like, oh gosh.
Maybe I shouldn't hit delete on that so fast.
So I responded, but then, and so we were super apprehensive about it, honestly, because, just putting ourselves out there and we have young kids and we're busy and just all of the things. But we just kind of felt like we just said, okay, well, we'll just do the one thing. So we did we filmed a sizzle reel and then we filmed a pilot. And we kind of just did whatever that one thing in front of us without thinking too far in advance. We didn't ever know if it would come to a season or if it would be anything.
Right.
So now here we are. We finished the season and now it started airing on October 22nd, so a few weeks ago. Yeah.
So I've seen a couple of the episodes.
Okay, good.
It's fun to watch. I
I love the home decorating thing.
Yes.
And, you know, renos, and it's just fun to watch.
Yeah.
With historic homes in particular.
Yes.
I can imagine there's probably sort of a metaphor for life in that you're uncovering all of these hidden gems, mm-hmm. and also some hidden challenges.
Yes.
So talk about that and how you deal with those. And
yeah, you basically, you always know when you're doing a renovation, especially for an historic home, there's always something that's going to go wrong. You just don't know what it is at the beginning.
Right.
You just never know what you're going to find, good or bad. And so, yes, they basically just, I mean, that's just normal for us because it's just what we've done for a long time. But they just basically followed us around with the camera. And when those things did happen, though, when we'd find something, they're like, wait, you know, we got to make sure we get that on camera. So there were times that we would like look at something and like, oh, gosh, I'm like, no, stop, put it back. So that's a little behind the scenes.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I think the hardest thing was our timeline was super short for filming these episodes. So we had like 5 weeks start to finish for these renovations. And so it's so fast and so great. And we were doing 2 to 3 houses at a time. And so when something legitimately did go wrong, it was just really frustrating and hard and a little bit stressful because we're like, okay, we're not only losing time, but also we were already tight typically on the budgets too. Yeah. So, but we always had to get creative and think fast. It was a lot of stress filming, but it was also really fun because we had a lot of fun, and it really did force us to be way more creative, I think, than we normally have to be, because we normally don't have that mm-hmm. intense pressure of the timeline.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously cameras as well. Yes, <sir. laughs> Details. But yeah.
Well, I wonder, you talked about your reticence with the kids and the families mm-hmm. being out there. And I noticed in the first couple of episodes, you do have the kids in and out, and they aren't like picture perfect moments, which I kind of love.
Yeah.
The kids are in the dumpster and you're like, oh, are there sharp objects in there? Should you be in there? And Dave's like, oh, it's fine. And then you're like trying to get the lunches together. Where's your coat? Everybody, we're late. Mm-hmm. We have to be there in 10 minutes. So I kind of like that it's real.
Yes.
Anyone that has kids knows it's real.
Exactly.
Was that an intentional decision or did it just kind of happen that way?
I think it was sort of intentional. Yeah. No, it was intentional. I would say yes. It did just happen that way just because like those things that you see are just did happen. Like my boys always go in the dumpsters. They've done this for their whole lives where we're at a construction site and they are constantly looking for treasures. So I actually did not want them to show that because I was like, somebody's going to say, hey, there's probably nails in there. You know, there's always someone that's going to say something. And I'm like, you know, it is what it is. They're just boys and they collect random treasures all the time.
That's what they do.
But I will say we and our production company had a really clear understanding that Dave and I both were adamant that we show our lives for like what they are. You know, we are very open and transparent about who we are. We want to be authentic.
Right.
And we want most importantly, and this is just in our real life, but then also obviously wanted it to translate to the show, but we want to make people feel welcome and we want to make people feel like, I always say, if somebody comes to my house, I want them to feel just good about themselves. I don't want them to leave feeling like, oh man, I wish my house was that nice or perfect or my kids were that, you know? So I'm like, I want them to realize like we're real and I want them to feel welcome and feel comfortable and leave feeling better about themselves, not worse about themselves. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted that to translate to the show as well. Like, I don't want people watching the show thinking, oh man, look at their kids. They're so, you know, they've got it all together, because nobody has it all together. Right. And if they do, then they're lying.
Right. It is not true.
It's not true. I love that. And the production company was on the same page 100% about that as well. They're like, we want people to watch this and feel like, oh, yeah, that's real life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Good. Let's talk a little bit about more about family.
Okay.
You're an adoptive mom.
Yes.
And I am too. We talked about that. Like so many other women, at some point you struggled with infertility.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty common challenge for women these days.
Yes.
Can you share a little bit about your adoption story, why you did it, what you would tell other people about why, you know, why it's a great thing to do?
Yeah, I try to do it quickly. I got a lot to talk about. Okay, so Dave and I knew, we both knew that we wanted to adopt. We don't really know. There was never like a moment that we said, I don't know. We just both knew we wanted to adopt at some point in our journey to build our family, but we also knew that we wanted to have biological kids. Honestly, I had this early on when we decided to start a family, I had sort of this, I call it a vision. I don't know. It sounds kind of crazy, but I just had this moment where I had this image of Dave and I at the island, kitchen island. And then there were just these kids running in and out, like just chaos. And one of them was blonde and one of them had really dark skin. And that's all I knew. And that's all I like could, I remember specifically. And I just remember this like whirlwind of chaos, which is so funny because that is our life now. It's just chaos. And so I knew that one of our kiddos was gonna, I just knew we had a child in Africa. That was like, I don't even know how to describe it. And people ask why Congo, why Africa, like in a continent of Africa. And I just knew that's where our child was. That's the only reason. And so, we did decide to adopt. Well, we decided we want to start a family and we knew we wanted to adopt, but we thought, well, let's have biological. I don't know why. We just wanted to have biological kids first. I don't know. You know, you don't know when you're like, now I look back, I'm like, we didn't know a thing. But
we all have plans, right?
Yes. Yeah. Our plans were just ridiculous. So anyway, long story short, we had our twins and then decided, okay, they were a year and a half old and I knew I wanted to start the process of adoption, but it was also mass chaos at home because we had 1.5-year-old twin boys who were just crazy energy and just busy. And I didn't say a thing to Dave. I was like, I'm not going to say anything. He's going to think I'm crazy. And then one day he just looked at me. He's like, hey, I think we're supposed to start our adoption process. I'm like, oh my gosh, I've been thinking the same thing. So we went ahead and we're like, all right, started the paperwork. We knew we wanted to be in the Ethiopia program. A long story, but that specific program with that specific agency. And so we started that. We got on the waiting list and they said it would be about a year wait, which seemed fine at the time. So like, okay, great. The boys will be a little older. Makes sense. And then I got an email from one of the the organizations that places waiting kids. So kids that either have special needs or they just don't have families in their program to match with. And so Sylvie, our daughter was in that email and I've received dozens of these emails. So it wasn't like every time I got an email, I'm like, that's, you know, it was literally like I saw her and I just knew. And so I sent it to Dave. We went and met and had lunch and just prayed and prayed and prayed over it. And we just really felt like that was our girl. And so we actually ended up having to change agencies, which meant we lost all of our money, all of everything that we had invested in this Ethiopia program with this other agency. Oh, wow. And switched to the Congo program, which is where Sylvie was. And it was a little bit, I mean, it was pretty scary because we were like, wow, this is a brand new program. We don't really know anything about it. And it ended up being pretty tumultuous. Like it was ended up taking almost 2 years to get her home. Or 2 years. The country closed down, so we couldn't bring her home. Oh, it was just a lot. It was a lot of ups and downs.
Yeah. And that's typical.
It is so typical.
International adoption.
It really is. Yeah. And you always go into it thinking, oh, it's going to be right. It's going to be 6 months. Like they told
that's
us.
What they said.
Yeah. It'll be fine. Yeah. She'll be home by Christmas.
So how old was she when she came home?
So she was 2.5.
Okay.
Yeah. When she came home, which was in 2014. Okay. In summer of 2014. So yeah, now
and it's so you have five kids.
We have five.
And they range in ages from?
The boys are now 9. And then Sylvie's 7 and Charlotte is 5 and Luke is 5 months. He'll be 5 months next week.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
You do have chaos.
Yes, we do. And we always said,
Just start a television show on top of all
right,
this.
Right. Exactly. Why not? And we were like, oh, after, you know, we bring Sylvie home, it'll be perfect. It'll be 3. We'll be good. And then,
yeah.
We had other, yeah.
Yeah.
We had two more. It was fun.
I can sense your heart for others in a lot of what you do, your adoption story and just reading about the things that you're involved in. The Berry Farm,
yes,
which I know is a place where the local community can come and pick food and just kind of see that up and close.
Yes.
Also benefits Zimbabwe.
Yes.
It's a teen work program there.
Yes.
Why don't you talk a little bit about how that came about and
what
your passion is there.
Yeah. So we, just through our adoption process with Sylvie and going to Congo and learn, and we actually started a nonprofit that we worked in the Congo first, and we actually partnered with a nonprofit organization in Congo, and we just had a feeding program, and it all just started from being there and seeing the need in Sylvie's old orphanage that she had been in. And so I just started raising money just to feed the kids. Really, it was not anything, any big thing. It was just feeding this handful of kids every week, basically. And then it just kind of kept growing and growing. And so we partnered with a organization in Congo, and then we ended up getting all the kids working through them to get the kids sponsored. And so they were the kids that were in there in the program were all sponsored, taken care of, and we were like, okay, good, we did our thing. But then we knew there was more,
right?
And so it actually led us to Zimbabwe because of connections in the nonprofit world, basically. And we partnered with an organization called Help One Now, and they work in Zim. They work in 13 communities around the world, but Zimbabwe is their least funded program, and it's actually the place where they started. And we ended up working there because when Dave had traveled to the Congo to check on our program, and on the way home, he decided to stop with Help One Now into Zim to learn more about what they were doing there. And when he was there, he just fell in love with the team and Pastor John and Orpah, who are the founders of the program there. Mm-hmm. And he was like, they are just the real deal. I just know that the work they're doing is amazing. And so we supported them, but we were still working in Congo, and we just kind of thought, well, that's awesome. They're great. And we'll continue to, you know, support them a little bit. But once our Congo program was fully sponsored, we still had money coming in, and we didn't know where we would go with it. And so we went back and thought, oh my goodness, what about Pastor John and Orpah and the work they're doing? So we decided, okay, we're all in Zim. And at the time, we had planted this blueberry farm, which is a whole long story, but Dave basically decided, why not plant a blueberry farm? Because we have nothing else going on. And so we planted this farm, not really knowing what would come of it, but we knew we were going to have a UPIC farm, and that was pretty much it. We were going to use the money to fund our program in Congo as our initial kind of, well, that's what we assumed would happen. But by the time, it takes about 3 years for the plants to be ready. Okay. So by the time the plants were ready, our Congo program had
moved on
fully funded. Yeah, and so we'd moved on. So we went to Zim. I went on a trip. The kids, Dave and the kids and I went to South Africa first. They stayed in South Africa and I went to Zimbabwe for a week. And when I was there, we're just sitting around Pastor John's table talking and kind of dreaming together. And he shared his heart for the older kids in the program who don't have, basically they're plugged into school, but they haven't been in school their whole life. So they're really not set up for success. And they, that was just really where his heart was. And it's 100% was where Dave and I's heart was as well. Because we wanted, like, these kids are like, they're about to become 18 and just be back on the streets. And what's going to happen? Like, it's not breaking that cycle of extreme poverty and brokenness. It's not setting them up for success. And so John shared his dream of this gardening agriculture program. And so we went the next day and looked at this land. And it had, it already had orchards. It had vegetable gardens. They had livestock. It was just, and literally when you walked onto it, you just felt this overwhelming sense of peace. Like, it's just the most beautiful place. I can't even describe how incredible it was. It's called Gatehouse. And there were families living there who had been living there for years, and they were now all elderly, and their kids had moved out of Zimbabwe because the country has just not, is right. Not somewhere they could stay.
Right.
So they're there. They're unable to care for the land, and they love John, Pastor John. And basically, while we were there, we came to an agreement to rent the land from them for this program. And we're talking, and we're kind of just dreaming about what this could look like. And I just realized, I'm like, wait a second, we have our farm that's going. And that summer, so that was in January. That summer would be our first harvest. Okay. And I was like, I don't know what we could do with it, but I know. We don't know what we're going to do. We know we're not doing this for ourselves. We're doing it for something. We just don't know what. So let's partner with our farm and this farm, and let's just fund it. Let's do this. So out of that trip, yeah, we basically just walked away with this new program. We call it the Gatehouse program. It took about a year to kind of set up and get training in place and all that for the kids. But now we have the first round of students is about to graduate the program, and they'll have new students in, and they just basically learn a trade. They learn how to farm. They learn, and they also sell the products, and they also feed the kids at the orphanage with the food. So it's really just this full cycle, holistic program that kind of sets them up for success, which is awesome. And our little community is funding it. And a lot of times people don't even know, they're just picking berries with their family because it's fun. And they don't realize. Yeah. Yeah. So it's pretty neat.
It's amazing.
Yeah. It's great.
So kindness is mm-hmm. woven into the fabric of TriDelta.
Yes.
Our founders called us to be kind alike to all. And I see mm-hmm. so much of that in what you're doing. And I'm wondering what from your TriDelta experience might have impacted some of the decisions you've made in your career or your family. And
yeah.
sort of throughout your life after college?
Right. I mean, I think the introduction to just philanthropy. I don't know that I really, I mean, I always, our family did a lot of things in the community, but I never really understood what true philanthropy looked like until Tri-Delta and that involvement. And just, I remember we went, when we were serving our year as executive or chapter consultants, we went to St. Jude, and I remember how impactful that was just to see, because, you know, we had done all these fundraisers in our chapter, but we didn't get to, you don't get to see it. You weren't there. And I think just going and seeing it, that was so, I mean, I distinctly remember that and just how impactful that was. And yeah, I think it really did just sort of shape this idea for me that we don't live our lives just for ourselves, that we live it for other people. And there's this ripple effect that sometimes you don't see, you know, and that being able to see it there, like, okay, we're actually impacting these actual people, these actual kids that are here with our fundraiser that we did in Orlando at UCF, you know, is really amazing. So I think that initial just being exposed to that, I think was so important and found it in shaping kind of what, like, my outlook on the world, you know?
Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you for being with us today. I appreciate it so much. I want to make sure the listeners know where to find the show.
Yes.
It's on HDTV. Is it Tuesdays? I watch everything on Hulu, so I have no idea what time it actually comes on.
Yes. Watch it live, because it's better if we watch it live. We get better ratings. No, it's Tuesday nights at 9, 8 Central.
Okay.
Every Tuesday. Right. Yeah.
Fixer to Fabulous. Yes. You can also learn more about Jenny and Dave and all of these amazing efforts that you have going on at ourgoodtable.com.
Mm-hmm.
She has a blog, like I said, the berry farm. I mean, there's so much that you guys are doing that's impacting people. I just love it. I love it.
Thank you.
We hope you guys will watch the show and watch Jenny and Dave on their adventure. Thank you so much for being here. We love having you.
Thank you. So fun. Thanks for having me.
That's our show for today. Thank you for joining us and for listening to Let's Talk Tri-Delta. Special thanks to Jenny Mars for her visit to Tri-Delta today and for sharing her story with our listeners. You can check out the latest issue of the Trident, now available online, at tridelta.org/trident, and in your mailbox in print for dues-paying members. We'd love to hear from you. Email us show ideas at podcast@trideltaeo.org. And be sure to like, subscribe, and share this podcast. And we always love it when you write us a review. Thanks for talking Tri-Delta with us. Join us next time, and bring you.